Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for January 1st, 2018. This is David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey there, David, and good evening, everybody out there, and Happy New Year. I can't believe we're actually rolling into 2018. I wish everyone out there a wonderful New Year and a lot of happiness and health. Tonight we're going to devote our show to a quick look back over 2017, but also look ahead to 2018 and important issues facing the veterans. First, I'll remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, your comments, and your questions, so you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Remember, veterans, this is your show. David and I are the messengers, but this is your show. It's about you. It's about your experiences in service and your experiences since you've been out, your dealings with the VA, both on the health side and the benefit side. So please call in, and no matter what we're doing at the time, we'll take your call and look forward to hearing from you. But first, let me go back to David. David, back to you.
Thanks, Richard. Last week on Christmas Day, we had an hour of excellent Christmas music in place of our regular live show. If you listened in, we hope you enjoyed the show, and we thank our show producer, Doug Newsom, for making that happen. And okay, now for a quick recap of some recent news. During our December 11th show, we discussed a thorough summary of key legislation passed by Congress and signed into law in 2017. For those who missed that show, you can find an archived podcast of the December 11th show on our show's website, which is bbsradio.com/TheVeteransNewsHour. On December 18th, we discussed several recent news reports issued by the VA, along with some ongoing issues which will likely receive further attention in the next year. We're going to continue that discussion tonight. But first, we'd like to begin with a special message from VA Secretary Dr. David Shulkin, focused on VA accomplishments for the year 2017. I'll ask Doug to please roll that tape now.
Happy holidays. 2017 has been a year of accomplishments for the Department of Veteran Affairs, and this is a perfect time to reflect on and acknowledge and thank all of those who have enabled our many accomplishments for veterans during this past year. We owe so much to our nation's leaders and others in and outside of government for supporting and enabling improvements to the ways in which we serve veterans. First and foremost, let me express my gratitude to President Trump. His leadership and vision have driven and inspired VA to better care for veterans and their families. Among his many supportive acts and leadership initiatives, he has signed 9 bills to improve our ability to serve veterans, as well as 1 executive order and 3 presidential proclamations. He has personally participated in and led 6 events honoring veterans, and he has kept their interests foremost in the minds of all Americans by mentioning their service and sacrifices in 25 of his public speeches. He was the driving force behind the White House Hotline for Veterans, which opened for 24/7 service in October and has now served more than 16,000 callers. Vice President Pence has also been critical to every initiative involving veterans. He personally led our Veterans Day ceremony at Arlington Cemetery and demonstrated his concern for veterans by supporting and attending honor flight ceremonies and events such as the Wounded Warrior Bicycle Ride. Thanks to all the members of Congress for making 2017 a legislative success for veterans. With the unwavering support and leadership of our VA committees, Congress supported and passed groundbreaking legislation on VA accountability, appeals reform, the Forever GI Bill, Veterans Choice Improvements, and Personnel Improvements and Extension of Choice Funding. Thank you also to my fellow Cabinet Secretaries and leaders of administrations for their departments and agencies' support. The Department of Defense, we are now partnering better than ever with the Department of Defense on the new electronic medical record and shared purchasing to better serve both veterans and service members and use taxpayer resources in an efficient way. Thanks to Housing and Urban Development, together, VA and HUD helped house over 61,000 homeless veterans last year alone. Thanks to the Department of Energy, with their assistance, we've launched an important initiative in brain health and big data supercomputing to expand dramatically our research into veterans' health. Thanks to the Department of Labor, working together, the unemployment rate for veterans has dropped to 2.6%, the lowest in 17 years. Thank you to the Department of Education. With their support, VA has enabled more than 1 million veterans to use the GI Bill in 2017. Thanks to the Department of Health and Human Services, our collaborations have led to 620,000 veterans participating in our Precision Medicine Initiative. We've achieved a reduction of 36% in opioid use since 2012, and we've produced over 10,000 research papers that will better help us serve veterans and all Americans. Thanks to the Department of State, with their help, we've coordinated the visits of dignitaries from over 16 countries to the Department of Veteran Affairs. The Department of Justice has assisted us in revising and coordinating new telehealth regulations and regulations for prescriptions to improve veterans' access to care and medications. Thanks to the Department of Interior, who've helped us provide employment opportunities for veterans through their Park Ranger internship program. With the help of the Small Business Administration, we at VA have almost doubled the goal of giving businesses that are service-connected contracts through the Department of Veteran Affairs. And thanks to partners in the private sector who are helping provide veterans care in 2017, VA authorized 6.1 million community care appointments. That's a 42% increase over where we were in 2016. These and other collaborations have helped VA make significant progress in serving veterans and their families. We have become more transparent by posting our wait times for veterans' appointments, posting veteran satisfaction data with VA Care, and posting facility quality scores and our accountability actions. We've reduced drop calls to our Veterans Crisis Line from 35% about a year ago to less than 1% today, and we've established same-day access to primary care and mental health care at all of our facilities. We've identified 430 unused or underutilized facilities for disposal, and we've improved our claims processing by 18% in 2017. All of these accomplishments have resulted in raising veteran trust scores from a low of 46% in 2014 to 70% today. But we still have much work to do, and we at VA look forward to the continued support and leadership of President Trump, members of Congress, veteran service organizations, and all Americans as we fulfill Lincoln's famous words, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow and his orphan. As the year comes to a close, may God bless each and every one of you, and may God continue to bless this wonderful country of ours.
Well, that was interesting, Richard. I'd like to thank Dr. Shulkin for that pre-recorded message. I'd like to thank him for his service as the VA Secretary for the last year. He was, I think, the only cabinet member who had also served during the Obama administration. He had served as the head of the VA health side, and then under President Trump, he got a promotion up to be in charge of all of the VA. And he's his background is in medicine. He is a medical doctor, and he has a lot of expertise in hospital administration. And I applaud him for what he has done. No single person can quickly reverse course and make all the changes overnight that are needed with the VA. But I think he's making certainly strong efforts over the last year. Richard, you and I know we've certainly had our observations and even criticisms of some of the legislation the VA Secretary Shulkin just alluded to, and we can talk more about that tonight as we have in previous shows. But before touching on some of those specifics, Richard, what are your thoughts on the Secretary Shulkin's remarks over the 2017 accomplishments by the VA?
Well, first, I'm glad to see he could highlight all his successes. That's terrific. We always like to praise ourselves, which is what he's doing here. And sometimes it would be nice to have maybe a point counterpoint and have someone provide the other opinion. Now, one of the first things that's so glaring for me on his list of his achievements or Congress's achievements is there's nothing really said about the compensation side of the VA. That continues to be a sore point with our government. Yes, as you said, David, nothing can be done overnight. I understand that. But when we spend, I forget how long he just spent giving all his achievements, and yet he never once touched on the compensation side, didn't even offer anything positive to say on the compensation side, maybe some sort of program that they're trying to initiate that, I heard, and we're going to talk about Congressman Gus Bularakis later, but I had heard his recent interview on a local station in Florida, and he talked about there's been 500 firings within the VA over the last year for, under that accountability legislation. He didn't really go into detail as to who those people were and what departments within the VA were fired. My point being is that as a person who spent most of my legal career in the civil side and criminal side, dealing with mediations and programs and arbitrations, programs that serve to move calendars, move cases, there just isn't any of that going on within the VA. Although the VA has a duty to assist our veterans, and I would submit that this would be one aspect of doing it. And the VA also talks about, you and I, David, we have go to these hearings, and we ask them to have a dialogue back and forth. And very few DROs, and we've had some successes with decision review officers who do utilize a dialogue process. I just wish Secretary Shulkin, because clearly this isn't reinventing the wheel. This has been utilized in litigation for decades. And I wish Secretary Shulkin would address something like that, would offer some initiative. And it's good to see what he's done and the successes he's had. But I wish he would have commented more about what they're doing to help with the backlog. What do we have, David? About 450,000 cases on appeal that are backlogged. So
yeah, that are post NOD, post notice of disagreement, or later. Yes.
Yeah, I mean that's just these are and the reason I harp on this all the time and to people who have been listening in and they say, oh, there goes Hurley again talking about this over and over. Well, the reality is that's what I deal with every day. I deal with veterans. I think today, first day of the new year, I took 31 emails or text messages from my client asking what's going to happen to their case in 2018. And I feel like an idiot because I tell them, well, your case really is only 2 or 3 years old. Only 2 or 3 years old. It pains me to have to respond that way. So, God bless Secretary Shulkin and Congress for what they've done so far. And he does say that there's more work to be done. But I want to know how he's going to do it. And not just passing this legislation that we saw, the Modernization and Appeal Act. I mean, not just pass something like that, which, David, you and I have looked at that, and that is just an accident waiting to happen. So, I'd love to get up to D.C. and talk to some of these people, because these are not out-of-the-box ideas, they just need to be implemented. So that's kind of my thoughts. Again, I focus on the compensation side. Secretary Shulkin's praising everything he's doing on the health side, which I think by and large they do a pretty good job. And I get this not because I'm personally familiar with the health side, but I get this from my clients. And I would say 50 to 60% of my clients do feel that they get pretty good medical treatment. So those are just my quick observations about Secretary Shulkin's message.
If I could add to those, I completely agree with you, Richard, about Secretary Shulkin's silence on the disability compensation side of the House. He could have even applauded some of the initiatives that the VA has taken. We've discussed those in some of our earlier programs, including the fairly recent initiative, which the VA has called the Decision Ready Claims Program, in which it's a system where the VA is essentially promising veterans a much, much faster decision on certain initial claims, not appeals, but certain initial claims, if a veteran is working with a veteran service officer who's been trained in this program, and the veteran and the veteran service officer essentially do all the VA's work for it. Again, it's shifting the work to the veteran. Dr. Shulkin's statement was completely silent about, as you said, the benefit side, not just the instance I just gave about the disability claims, the initial claims, but even more so, failed to address the VA Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017, and that is really a landmark piece of legislation. It has a nice title to it. Congress passed it overwhelmingly, bipartisan support in both houses, and then signed by President Trump in August. But as you and I have discussed, Richard, I think we're in agreement, as well as some of the other veteran organizations like Vietnam Veterans of America, Military Veterans Advocacy. We have a lot of what we think are very valid criticisms of that legislation. You mentioned earlier, Richard, that the VA has a legal duty to assist veterans. Common sense says it should, and the law does, except this new appeals legislation removes, by statute, the VA's duty to assist veterans once a case has reached an initial claims decision. In other words, once it goes into the appeal process, the VA no longer has a duty to assist. What does that translate into? It translates into a more adversarial system than it already is. And it means that veterans are going to have to do even more work along with their representative to make sure their case is really solid, and they cannot blindly rely on the VA to be really looking out for the veterans' interest as they should. So those are some of the key issues. It's also interesting in Secretary Shulkin's prepared statement where he commended President Trump for being, quote, the driving force behind the White House hotline for veterans, which opened for 24/7 service in October of 2017 and has served more than 16,000 callers. Well, later in this show, I'm going to talk more about that White House VA hotline, but I think it's very important that the veterans use that hotline to provide feedback to the White House, and also to provide feedback to members of Congress by contacting their representatives and their two U.S. senators. And the VA hotline, White House VA hotline number, Grab your pen and paper. I'll give it to you right now, and I'll repeat it later in the show. But here's the toll-free number for the White House VA hotline. It was launched in June, but in October, it expanded to being operational 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. The number is 1-855-948-2311. Again, that's 1-855-948-2311. 1-855-948-2311. That's the White House VA hotline that you can call and provide, you know, your inputs, make complaints about any problems you have with the VA. And it's an opportunity, it's a method that the veterans now have provided by the Trump administration. You got to provide that feedback. If you sit back silently, veterans and veteran family members, and expect the system to somehow self-correct, it ain't going to happen. So that's those are just some of my thoughts. But before we talk about Congressman Gus Bilirakis of Florida here, Richard, any further observations that you have?
No, just, you know, hope that 2018 will be, you know, better year for our vets, and hopefully we can start resolving more of our cases favorably for our vets. And, you know, I, again, look forward to the challenge. The VA presents quite a challenge.
Yeah,
you know, I'm just going to continue. You know, one of the things that, just to let our listeners know, one of the things that I'm really going to try to work on this year, more so than years in the past, only because I've seen it be successful with the, with the decision review officers that I've worked with, which is to try to reach out to these decision review officers and encourage them to have dialogue and, you know, encourage them to try to, you know, discuss the case before we even have to have a hearing. You know, you know, these hearings that we do have, you know, by and large, you know, they're somewhat disappointing, in my opinion, because we don't really accomplish as much as I'd like to get accomplished. You know, for those veterans out there who maybe aren't familiar with the process, it's not like going to court and having the judge render a decision at that time. That just doesn't happen. You know, you go there, you know, we have a prepared case that we present to our veteran, we do a hearing, and then, you know, first, when my personal feeling is that these decision review officers feel like they're on the defensive, and rather than being proactive to try to resolve the case for the veteran, they tend to just listen to the information and kind of look at you and say, okay, well, good, but it's going to take me, you know, when we finish, the first thing that seems like they'd say, well, you know, it's going to take me 6 to 9 months before I get a transcript back, or it's going to take me this. All they do is talk about how long it's going to be. You know, they don't talk about offering assistance as to how we can get this case resolved. So I'm going to work on trying to get these decision review officers and staffers to create dialogue with me, and hopefully we'll be more successful and we'll get these cases resolved in a more timely manner. So
yeah, I think that's important.
That's kind of my New Year's resolution, I guess. I guess that's what I just did then, New Year's resolution.
Well, I hope that will be productive. I think, you know, my observations with these decision review officers, and for those not familiar with that term, a decision review officer is a VA employee at the regional office level who renders a decision after a claim has been denied or issued a rating and the veteran has appealed. They file a notice of disagreement. They can... one of their options under the existing system is to ask for a decision review officer. Well, in a year and a half from now, when the Modernization Act, when the Veterans Appeals Improvement Modernization Act is fully implemented, and right now it's in an 18-month transitional phase, decision review officers are going to be replaced with another review level as just one of three options that veterans are going to have. We'll see if the system operates any faster than it is. It's very, very slow right now. You know, it can take, like you said, Richard, you know, it can take several years. We've waited 3 or 4 years to get a hearing with the decision review officer. And then after the hearing, like you said, we've waited, in some cases, a year and a half before getting a decision. And it's very unfortunate. We have on the other side of the coin, though, to the VA's credit, we have had a few cases where the VA, because of the veterans either seriously poor health or advanced age or other reasons, financial hardship, they have advanced a case on the docket. I had a case in which we had a decision review officer hearing in February of 2017. The decision, which was called a statement of the case, was issued in July of 2017. And then we immediately appealed, and we were successful in getting the Board of Veterans Appeals, which was the next level, to advance the case on the docket because of the veteran's advanced age. And we had our Board of Veterans Appeals hearing in December, a little less than a month ago. Now, we haven't received a Board of Veterans Appeals decision yet. I'm not sure when that's going to happen. Could be months, hopefully not more than 3 to 6 months, I'm hoping, but we'll see. So the point of all this, veterans and family members of veterans and other concerned citizens, is pay attention to this. Congress did enact landmark legislation totally revamping the VA appeals, their claims, appeals processes, as well as eliminating the VA's duty to assist when cases are on appeal, making many other changes. That legislation is being implemented over an 18-month period, which just started a couple months ago, and we'll see how that goes. But meanwhile, if your case is one of those that is utilizing this new system, provide feedback. You know, and that means to your members of Congress, call into our show. Let us know. Let our listeners know your experiences. I think that's important. I'd like to shift gears and talk about, you know, we heard the recording from Dr. Shulk and the VA secretary. I wanted to share some other insights that I've received. I got an email yesterday morning from the office of Congressman Gus Bilirakis of Florida. He represents a district, Tampa Bay area. He's a Republican, and he sits in a relatively powerful position as far as veterans issues. He's the vice chairman of the Veterans Affairs Committee in the U.S. House of Representatives. I'd like to quote a few portions of his email, if I could, because I think those are of interest to veterans. And he begins by saying, and I quote, this is Congressman Gus Bilirakis, he says, "I've had the privilege of working on a variety of initiatives to help veterans this year. We continue to provide substantial increases in VA funding, with more than a 70% increase in funding since 2009. Even so, we have seen that more money doesn't always translate into better results, which is why we have remained committed to providing ongoing oversight and accountability. The Accountability and Whistleblower Protection Act was signed into law this summer after multiple VA scandals. It puts meaningful reforms in place to ensure VA employees are fulfilling their duty to serve veterans. This common sense bipartisan legislation grants the VA secretary the authority to fire any employee for misconduct and protects those employees who report problems from retaliation," end of quote. Congressman Bilirakis then went on to highlight several pieces of legislation that he thought were of significance this past year. One was the Veterans Educational Assistance Act, which will improve and extend GI educational benefits. Congressman Bilirakis says that he authored some of the language in that legislation, which would also modernize the VA information technology system. He says in his email, quote, "Another priority issue has been reducing the time it takes the VA to process compensation and pension claims as well as appeals, unquote. And then he highlights the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017, which Richard and I just discussed. Congressman Bill Araxes is obviously hopeful that it will streamline the appeals process and hopefully get veterans the benefits they have earned more quickly. Caveat here, my opinion, I think, Richard, you agree, we'll have to see if that actually happens. I'm really skeptical on that. Congressman Bill Araxes also highlighted in his email legislation to improve, to fix problems with the so-called VA Choice Program, which is a program on the health care side which allows veterans to seek private care when the VA can't see them in a facility, in a VA facility, near their home in a timely manner. That VA Choice Program legislation is currently moving through the legislative process, and Congressman Bill Araxes said that he's co-sponsored various bills to do that, and he's working hard to ensure their passage. And he also concludes by emphasizing, in his view, that there is more work to be done to ensure veterans receive the care and benefits to which they are entitled. So he's not in any way implying that whatever's happened in 2017 is the cure-all, the fix. He goes on to say in his email, quote, "I am particularly concerned about the transition process for veterans as they reintegrate into civilian life. We spend at least 6 months preparing military personnel for service and less than a week preparing them for a successful transition back into civilian life." He says, quote, "I have assembled a working group of leaders in the local veteran community to make recommendations about how to improve this process and have participated in hearings on the subject. This is a priority for me throughout this year." And finally, Congressman Bill Araxes mentioned that he's filed what's called the Vet Care Bill to expand veterans' access to dental care while at the same time saving the VA money, or so he says. He says that many people do not realize that very few veterans receiving health care through the VA qualify for dental care. He says many people do not realize that, but I can assure you veterans realize that they're not getting that dental care, at least most of them, under the current system. So he's hoping that this program, which would be initiated through a pilot program first, can then be demonstrate savings and can be replicated further. But it's all part of trying to improve the VA health system. He's also concerned about issues we've talked about on previous shows. We had a guest, John Wells from Military Veterans Advocacy Group, who was fighting for the Blue Water Navy veterans from the Vietnam War, those that are Navy veterans that served offshore or in ships that weren't in the inland waters of Vietnam, and trying to address the Agent Orange exposure that they had. And he's working on that legislation as well, among other things. So those are some of the things that Congressman Gus Bill Araxes, who's the vice chairman of the House Veterans Committee, wanted to reach out and communicate to his constituents recently for 2017. And I urge that our listeners who are interested pay attention to what the House and the Senate committees are doing. The real action is in the Veteran Affairs Committees, both the House and the Senate. They've got websites, veterans.house.gov and veterans.senate.gov. The websites are relatively user-friendly. You can track what's going on and certainly get their spin on it. So what are your thoughts on that, Richard?
Well, once again, we've got a politician who puts out all the wonderful things that he's doing. He kind of avoids, really getting into some of the other stuff, which I'm sure is not so successful, but clearly he's talking about some good stuff, and that's, can't argue with the good stuff. The good stuff is the good stuff. However, what my one observation about Bill Araxes is that he tends to work within a controlled group of people around him, and by that I mean, He doesn't put himself out there to be available to a large group of veterans, let's say in a like they used to do with the town meetings with Obamacare. If he, you know, and we saw it this past year when he says that he's had a he's having a meeting with a group of veterans and on a website or a webinar, and when you tune in, you see like six or seven sitting there. So I think he tries to control and manipulate his exposure to veterans who might call him out on the hard stuff, the not good stuff. That's what we're talking about here. And, you know, I think, again, come 2018, I'm going to continue to try to get to Bill Arrakis and try to have a sit down with him. You know, David, you know, the longer you and I, and you've been doing this a lot longer than I have, but as we continue to do this year in and year out, we too have great suggestions for Congress that they could take back to D.C. and try to implement some of our suggestions, like the mediation and arbitration that I spoke of earlier tonight. But you got to get to these Congress people because they're the ones who are going to implement the legislation. And with Congressman Bill Arrakis, you know, he seems to avoid, you know, these types of, I guess, they're confrontations. But you know, even when I called down to Bill Arrakis' office, I'm calling as an attorney for veterans. I'm not calling as a voter. And first question they ask me is, where do you live? And I tell them where I live. Well, you're not within Congressman Bill Arrakis' district. And I'm like, well, I'm not calling as, you know, a voter within Congressman Bill Arrakis' district. I'm calling as an attorney who represents veterans.
And he's the vice chairman of the committee.
Yeah, and I get put off. I get put off. So, you know, it's that kind of stuff that has to change. So, you know, great with all the good stuff. Thank you, Congressman Bill Arrakis, for what you did in 2017. But clearly, not only do you need to implement more legislation to help our veterans, but you need to change your behavior within your office. And you need to, you know, open your door and let people who have good ideas approach you, be approachable, and you know, create that dialogue. And again, you know, this in order to fix the VA or repair the VA, it's going to take all of us. It's going to take everyone up in Congress. It's going to take veterans out there. It's going to take people who work in the VA, and it's going to take all the lawyers who represent veterans, because we do know what's going on, and we do have good suggestions for how to help repair the VA. So, Congressman Bill Arrakis, again, great job, but try being more approachable next time. And let's see what happens in 2018.
Great point. So, great point. Well, thanks for sharing your insight, Richard. I hope I hope we'll have more progress. I hope hope you're feeling better, too. I hear your cough there. Hope you're feeling
better. I was out in Omaha visiting family, and talk about freezing. It was minus 6 when I woke up in the morning. That's just unnatural for this body.
It was what you said?
Minus 6 degrees when I woke up every morning. Yeah. And stayed in single digits. So I think I'm carrying a little bit of the Omaha bug with me.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. But I think we've touched on, between Secretary Shulkin and Congressman Bill Arrakis, some of the key events from 2017. But let's go ahead and look ahead for the next year. I realize some of these issues are going to carry over, because as Congressman Bill Arrakis said, some of these issues are still pending, legislation is still pending. He's working on some of those ideas. But let's now spend next 10 minutes or so talking about some of the issues that veterans can expect to see, and maybe throw out some of our ideas, some of your ideas, Richard. What would you say are some of the big issues for 2018?
Other than what we've already touched on,
or maybe some solutions that you would offer, because you've mentioned it. Let's talk about VA health care. You know, last year, you know, we talked about how the VA is understaffed by literally tens of thousands, in the order of about 40,000 employees, most of those on the medical side as opposed to the claims and benefits side. There's a shortage of health care providers around the country in the private sector, so it's not surprising there's also going to be some in the VA, the government sector as well. But I think that's going to have to require more attention by the VA to recruit medical personnel and perhaps provide more incentives for people to want to work for the VA. Maybe it's by doing a greater effort to recruit military doctors and nurses and other medical specialists who are leaving active duty. Not that we want to, you know, use them to the VA to recruit them from active duty, but if they've decided to have a military career or they're retiring from the military, they could use their expertise in the VA, and the VA would benefit as would veterans, certainly. But then there's the issue of improving access to medical care. Dr. Shulkin has made this a key priority for his department, and Congress is certainly working on that. But the goal is to provide veterans with faster, more prompt medical care that's accessible, that will involve perhaps a closer and more effective partnership between the VA and the private sector, but not translate into totally privatizing the veterans' care. A lot of veterans' groups strongly oppose that because they recognize that the VA has a lot of institutional expertise in treating veteran issues that the private sector simply does not have. But the other thing I'd like to highlight, as I mentioned earlier, big issue to carry on into 2018 and into 2019 after that will be this implementation of the so-called Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act. We need veterans to provide their input based on their experiences, and the same for veteran service officers and other veteran advocates and lawyers. We need to push Congress to exercising some real oversight. You know, Richard, you and I really tracked the legislation as it moved through the House and Senate committees early in 2017, then was passed by those committees, and I found those hearings to be pretty much of a joke, because the groups like Vietnam Veterans of America and Military Veterans Advocacy were essentially ignored, and the hearings were only maybe one step ahead of being window dressing. And nothing more than that. By window dressing, I mean, in one of the hearings, the chairman of the House committee had in front of him in a panel about a half a dozen of the leaders of the major veterans group, like American Legion, Disabled American Veterans, Veterans of Foreign Wars, and some of these other ones, and simply went down the line saying, well, here's our proposed legislation that you all have pretty much worked with, along with the VA. In other words, these are already the ones that the instigators of this legislation, primarily driven by the VA bureaucracy itself. And then he simply went down the line. Any of you have any objection to it? And they were left with yes or no to this, when, in fact, even some of their own written submissions to the committee expressed some concern, even though the support of the legislation expressed some concern about it. So it's very important, our listeners out there, to pay attention to what is going on with this program, because this translates into... This is not just some esoteric legal discussion. It's not just some discussion for the Veterans News Hour once a week. This affects people's lives, because veterans have served their country. Some of them are severely disabled. They cannot work because of their physical disabilities and or their psychological disabilities. They can't work. They need the disability compensation to survive. And the VA, if they deny the claim for some reason, the rules are very complicated in some instances, or if they lowball the rating, instead of giving the veteran 100% rating, they give them a 30 or 40% rating, costing the veteran, you know, a couple $1,000s a month, for instance. But then the real crime is justice delayed, is justice denied, and they will cause these cases to languish in appeals for 3, 4, 5 years just for the next state. That really, really is a crime. And that's where we need people to be paying attention and to provide feedback. So Congress just doesn't sit back and say, well, we passed this legislation in 2017, solved the problem, let's move on. That's not going to be good. Another issue, Richard, I know we've talked about it, is the issue of service-connecting illnesses, respiratory issues, various cancers, immune disorders, other issues that are caused by the open-air burn pits that were used in Iraq and Afghanistan, affecting tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of veterans. Anything you'd like to talk about on that, the open burn pit issue? Richard?
Well, I think, as you were talking before, and what needs to happen, you know, 2017 we saw this new legislation. Well, with that has to come change within the VA system, and change is affected by the culture. You know, it should not be an adversarial process for a veteran to seek disability compensation for injuries that were service-connected. That's not what the whole purpose behind setting up the VA was for. But it has become an adversarial process. The burn pits issue is just that. Instead of the VA recognizing that these men and women were subjected to these burn pits and they've come back with certain ailments, and instead of just outright denying them, they need to start developing more research so that in the end, just like Agent Orange, they will be service-connected. But in the meantime, all the VA wants to do is throw up walls and say, it's not service-connected, there's no diagnosis for it, et cetera, so forth, and so on. So that kind of that attitude has to change. You know, one of our older vets, Vietnam veterans, who was a decorated combat veteran in Vietnam, said to me one day, you know, he thought the enemy was the Viet Cong, when the enemy really is his own government, because they're just, you know, not stepping up and helping them out. You know, that burn pits documentary that has been going around, and through your efforts, David, it's been seen here in the Tampa Bay area. You know, he said, well, when I enlisted, I was given a physical exam, and I checked out 100%. There was nothing wrong with me. I went over to Iraq, Afghanistan. I was subjected to these burn pits for a year or two, maybe longer. And I came back, and I had all these different ailments. I had tumors inside my nose, my face area. You know, clearly something happened over there, and the logical conclusion is that the exposure to these burn pits is what caused this particular veteran's ailment. You know, I grew up in the New Jersey area. We always call that cancer capital because of all the oil refineries. And there's parts of outside of the New York area, in Linden and Elizabeth area, where all the oil refineries are, where you can just smell this stuff day in and day out. And, you know, we have a very high cancer rate up in New Jersey. It's not far-fetched to think one has something to do with the other. So, you know, the culture has to change, and the VA, instead of being antagonistic and adversarial, they need to step up and, you know, work with the veterans and try to get these men and women compensated. And as you said, you know, it's a few thousand a month. You know, none of these veterans are running out there and buying big homes or lavish cars or expensive boats. They're just trying to put food on the table. And a little bit of compensation will help them go a long way. So that's right. One thought I had there, David.
Yeah. Three other issues I'd like to touch on real quick for veterans to look for in the next year is hopefully the VA will continue working on programs to help veterans and their families cope with PTSD. On our December 18th show. You can listen to the archive podcast on our website, bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. We talked about some of the cutting-edge research that the VA is doing to come up with new ways to treat post-traumatic stress disorder as well as traumatic brain injury. Another issue is for the VA to address the call by many veterans for expanding the Camp Lejeune presumption lifts for those that are exposed to contaminated drinking waters on that base from the early 1950s to the late 1980s. Our guest on the show next week will be Mr. Mike Partain, an expert in the Camp Lejeune issues, who has lobbied Congress and was actually present when President Obama signed legislation in 2012 dealing with health care for veterans and their families who were exposed to the Camp Lejeune contamination. But that's another issue that needs to receive more attention in 2018 because when the VA issued their regulation this past year in early 2017 establishing a presumptive list for service connection, they only listed 8 cancers and other conditions, which was about half of the 15 diseases which were on the list passed by Congress in 2012. So there's a disconnect there, needs more attention. And finally, the other issue would be for the VA to continue working on programs to help family members who serve as primary caregivers for severely disabled programs. We had another guest on our show, Ms. Lauren Price, in the fall, who discussed this particular program. But I think that's one that's going to require more attention. Now, before we wrap up the show, and Richard, before you talk about the coaching and the care program, I would like to make one other reminder about the White House VA hotline. Again, it's been created as a way that veterans can provide feedback to the White House, to the VA, and here's the number again. So grab your pen and paper if you're interested. The toll-free number for the White House VA hotline is this, 1-855-948-2311. That's 1-855-948-2311. The hotline's been fully operational, meaning 24 hours a day, 7 days a week since mid-October, and it's staffed by a team that's about 90% veterans or employees who have been a veteran family member, and that's in response to veteran feedback. They need to talk to people who can really relate to their experiences. So use that hotline, and hopefully it can help bring attention to the problem you're encountering with the VA. So I hope it's been an interesting show. We're about running out of time, so Richard, if you could remind our listeners about the VA's Coaching into Care program.
Yes, David, absolutely. If you are a family member of a veteran who has left the service and is having a tough time transitioning to civilian life, please be aware of the VA's program called Coaching into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call at toll-free 1-888-823-7458. So our hours are Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, the VA's Coaching into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they didn't get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
Thanks, Richard. Well, it's been another quick hour. It's time for us to go. We'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. We'd like to thank our producer, Mr. Doug Newsom. We'd also like to invite listeners to become show guests, sponsors, and advertisers. Our contact information is on our show website, bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. See you next week. Hope you have a great week. Thanks for listening in.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.